Blog Talk Radio. This is Debbie Guy-Geesh with the Pettowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. As everybody knows by now, every Thursday at 2 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how they've made that critical transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And this should be more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so please feel free to call in by pressing 1 or interact with us in our chat room, and we're happy to include you in the dialogue. So before I introduce this week's guest, I would like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketer, because we do have listeners from around the globe, and every week somebody says, she said revenue marketer, what is she talking about? So let me give you a definition for that term, because that is what this radio show is all about. A revenue marketer is a specific type of marketer. It is not just another check in your to-do box. And this marketer has revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. A revenue marketer is responsible for the top of the sales funnel, for interacting with and nurturing leads until they are sales ready. They all use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice to get revenue results. So every week on this show, we talk to revenue marketers and we learn about what it takes to build a successful revenue marketing practice. So we explore everything from metrics to people, skills, and compensation. We take a look at how you should be organizing your structure. What are the key processes? How do you align sales and marketing? What should your technology stack look like? How do you treat content and creative? And really, the overall demand generation strategies and tactics that are required. And the good thing about this show is that every revenue marketer on the show sat in your seat at one point. They all began their journey the same place that you're beginning your journey, and they're here to share that journey, to share their successes, and also to share their gotchas, so that your journey to becoming an elite revenue marketer will be quicker and also smoother. So this week, I am very, very excited to have as our guest Eric Webb, who is the Senior Director, Go-to-Market Services at RSM McLeodry, world's fifth largest accounting firm. And let me give you a little bit about Eric's background, something of a who's who. So over 22 years of marketing experience has enabled Eric to help improve the marketing strategies and tactics of both internet startups and also Fortune 500 companies. He has produced and co-wrote award-winning television commercials, been an associate producer for the Bull Sox television show, and specializes in media and direct marketing to improve ROI, an area that I know we all have a lot of interest in. His trademark is understanding what media works best for a strategy, and then combining that with solid, creative, and measurable marketing efforts. He's worked for companies like the Chicago White Sox, the Greenbrier Sporting Club, Rainsoft Treatment Systems, and also today RSM McLeodry. Having worked in both business, consumer marketing, and in very large dealer networks around the world, he understands the subtle art of marketing strategy, messaging, positioning, and Eric is a true revenue marketer. So, Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So, we're very glad to have you. So let's start with, before I kind of ask you about your role and your journey as a revenue marketer, I know that RSM McLeodry as an accounting firm kind of has a unique business development environment. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your firm, what you do, and what that development environment is like?
Sure. So the RSM McLeodry is unique in many ways, and one is that we have a sister company. As an accounting firm, we have assurance, tax, and consulting and services that we provide, and we have a sister organization called McGladrey & Pullen. They handle the assurance or the audit work, and then Arson McGladrey handles the tax and consulting work, and that was done to accommodate or to prevent another Enron from happening.
We don't want that to happen again.
That's right. So we can't have auditors and consultants be in bed together. So that's the premise of two separate companies. That in itself offers challenges in how we go out to market as one company but still maintain certain legal separations. Beyond that, as a large organization with 7,000 employees and professionals out there, we're in 70 countries through RSMI International, which is a network group. We have to try and work through a very decentralized organization, which is odd for a company this size. If you think about most companies this size would have, you know, a very centralized marketing group that ran everything on a national basis. In our firm, we're still moving to that. The firm itself was made up of several organizations throughout the country that were purchased. So through mergers and acquisitions, we grew to 100 locations across the country. And those were in what we called 18 economic units. So if you think about 18 regions, each of those having direct marketers, and you having to find a system and work together across those 18 regions, it becomes a very different type of marketing. It's almost franchise-like as opposed to, you know, being a very centralized organization. We are moving, we have consolidated to three, yeah. So that's good.
That's really good. So before we get into more about the structure, because I'm fascinated, and again, you guys have done such a superlative job of working demand generation within a distributed structure, before we go down that path, why don't you back up and tell me kind of how did you guys begin the whole notion of revenue marketing and demand generation? Kind of when did that begin and kind of what was that journey like for you?
We really started going down that path about 3 years ago. I was in a regional role with the firm, handling a region, one of those regions, and I was asked to come to national because of my direct marketing background and my advertising background, and so I took on those both two hats, and as I delved into the database, we did all use a centralized database, Salesforce.com. And started to do analysis on that data, I realized that our response rate was less than 1%. It was very poor. And as I looked at the creative that many of my brethren were deploying out there, it was very weak as well, weak offers and those types of things. So we started to try and search for ways to improve that. How can we improve that? And we, at the time, were working with Hart Hanks as our call center. And they offered up potentially a customized solution they could build as a lead management system to try and get everybody on a similar platform. And so we started to look at that, but that started to grow into something that was very, very expensive. And we decided that it was just not worth that effort. We started to look around at what other platforms might be out there that we could leverage that would take care of us in several parameters. Right, so we looked at things like could it be a system that's customizable enough to be decentralized or used in a decentralized way but provide some standards of quality of usage and allow us to see what everybody is doing. And then we also wanted a system that was, of course, easy to kind of learn. And we felt that we'd have to train a lot of people. So a big percentage of moving to a platform would be education. There was clearly a need to educate people around just best practices around direct marketing. And so those kind of became parameters, as well as integrating with some existing tools we had, such as Salesforce.com. We had to make sure that would integrate. So we went on the hunt for different systems, and we looked at many different systems for that and eventually landed to Eloqua to help us get that done.
And I was not part of, I was not part of the team that helped implement you guys, but I just want to tell my listening audience that I've seen the training manual, so to speak, that Eric and his team put together that talks about the steps for implementing Eloqua and how they were going to train and educate people from, like, ground zero. And it was one of the singular best pieces of work that I've ever seen, Eric. And I'm sure it looks even better because I think I looked at this thing like a year and a half ago. So I know that you guys have taken a very pragmatic and documented approach to your implementation. So looking for a system that you could easily customize but could work within a decentralized organization, including globally, something where you could standardize on quality but yet see all the activity, something that was easy to learn with the understanding that people needed education and training not just on how to use the application but really demand generation marketing overall, and something that would easily integrate with your current systems, including Salesforce.com. Were there any other benefits that you were looking for out of a demand generation system when you guys were shopping?
Well, ultimately, we wanted to get to a point where we'd have a much more measurable system for measuring our campaign, you know, our ROI, and having connectivity to the sales group, the business development group, and the marketers out in the field, and even nationally, were somewhat disconnected. And I viewed it as a potential way to reconnect those two groups so they worked more hand-in-hand, and that we could hand off better quality leads and they would accept those leads and then do a better job of recording, you know, what had happened to those leads. Because we fell into the trap like I think most companies do, and that was 80% of our leads that were being handed over to sales were not being followed up on. And that's because the qualification of those leads was very poor. And so sales just kind of assumed every lead handed to them was probably a very poor lead, unless it was a very large entity and they wanted somehow to get in there.
So how did you in the beginning change that mindset on the business development team's part that now the leads coming from marketing were of higher quality?
Well, we're still working on that, but what they do see is they see the activity. Now they see the activity of that person. And what I mean by that is, you know, Eloqua allows you to deploy scripts on your website, and that was an important component is that we try and measure, you know, measurement. So part of that measurement is, of course, having that behavioral touch and being able to see what somebody's doing as they peruse through our site or download something or fill out a form. And so when they get a lead, they can actually see what that person's been doing. And then there's always the kind of whiz-bang whistles that are included with Eloqua, such as the alarm setting where you can have a BD get alarmed and be sent a profile the minute somebody from that company shows up on the website or does something, responds to a demand generation effort. So those were things that started to kind of tease them along and get them interested.
That is excellent. Yeah, and so when the very first time somebody got one of those alarms, what was their response to it, one of those alerts?
Oh, yeah. I let me tell you a story. So
okay.
I might mention this to you once, Debbie. I had a BD here in Charlotte, and he was targeting Lowe's Corporation, the big hardware giant. And he had a meeting with them, and for 2 or 3 months he could not get a hold of that CFO again. And it was really frustrating him, but we had put an alarm on that CFO's email. So if he showed up and he had registered for one of our newsletters, then something would happen. And sure enough, at 5:30 one day, he gets pinged with an alarm, shows the profile. It's so interesting. You look at the profile that comes to the BD and you see, you know, I think it's Joe W. At Lowe's Corporation. Click through, and you see that he clicked through on Tax Digest, our publication, and you can see that it was delivered at, you know, 5:35, and he clicked on it at 5:36. and RBD called him at 5:37 and got through past the, any kind of receptionist or secretary, and the guy was in his office. And he had a conversation, you know, not – he didn't have a conversation saying, hey, I saw that you clicked on an email, because, you know, that, of course, is a little big brotherish and creepy. But he did call and just say, oh, I thought I'd give you a call. We have a lot of clients who have been asking us a lot about tax issues. And of course, that he led the question that way just because he knew he had downloaded Tax Digest, which is a newsletter we offer. And he got an appointment for the next week. So he, you know, it helped him bypass this hurdle he was having to get in touch with this guy.
That's such a great story, Eric, and a lot of times people always ask me, how do you get sales on board? Well, this is a great example. When you've got a full-featured marketing automation system like Eloqua, the ability to use those alerts so that either – it doesn't matter if you're elephant hunting or if you are working a transactional environment, just knowing that somebody that you've been trying to reach is on your website and you can catch them real-time – is incredibly impressive, and salespeople absolutely positively love that stuff. So you guys implemented Eloqua, Eric, about 3 years ago, correct?
Actually, it's only been about a year and a half.
Oh, okay, about a year and a half ago. And so tell me about your implementation. What was that like for you guys?
So the leveraging the Eloqua team, their professional services group, they were very helpful, you know, and that's one thing I mentioned as one of the criteria was that we really wanted to make sure we were leveraging best practices across the board, and they had a lot of that information, whether it was coming from Serious Decisions or their own clients they'd already previously worked with. They could share what was working, what was not. So that was very helpful in getting us organized and working. So and they were very efficient about getting parameters of how it was going to integrate with Salesforce. We also did hire a consultant, local representative. Now, our headquarters is really in Minneapolis, and so that's where a lot of my team is. My team's all over the U.S., but the team that runs it is in Minneapolis, and so that we hired somebody there to help implementation as well there. And then I had Salesforce and a Salesforce consultant, making sure the two systems talked to each other and synced correctly so that we wouldn't be, you know, overriding data by accident, those kind of things. A big part of that implementation after we kind of just went through the initial parameters of the technology was, again, going back to the realization that there needs to be a big education component here, because the people out in the field had all sorts of levels of marketing experience. Some of them had very little, actually. They were more like coordinators almost. And we wanted to first develop a training program. And so our demand generation staff created a very thorough training program, which started out with 2 days of training on Eloqua from the Eloqua representative. And at 2 days, they went through the whole system and showed everybody how to use it. And these people became what we called power users. We ended up training about 18 people in those 2 days. And we flew them in.
Were those 18 people both field and corporate marketing?
Yes.
And did you have anyone outside the U.S. as being trained in that initial group?
Not in that initial group. We have not.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Yeah. The whole goal first was get that initial core trained up and running, and they had to take that training, and then they had to go back, and they had to take a test, which we designed for them to become official power users. And so we kind of treated that and encouraged it as kind of a new level of title, if you will, within the firm. And, you know, and I spoke to a lot of those people. I said, you know, just having this knowledge, being able to use this system is great for your career.
I think you're the only company I know that has actually created their own test for any marketing automation system. How long did it take folks to get through the test that you guys designed?
Not too long. It was probably a half hour online test. And I think we used something like Brain Shark or one of the online learning tools.
Yeah.
And you had to get an 80% or higher.
Excellent.
And so they did that, and then every month we have two different types of training. One is always an hour long, and it's kind of the basics, so anybody new coming on can go to that. And then we have the more advanced group every month, and that's an hour long, and they go over more detailed things, and they talk about best practices, because my group monitors what are the best practices, response rates, and click-through rate, all those kinds of things, and then they report out on who did the best, those kind of things, and what didn't work and what did work. And so that power core group is always kind of learning what the next best thing or idea that has worked within the system. And they can see it. They can grab those templates, copy them, and then try them themselves, which is one thing we loved about Eloqua, is that everybody can go into everybody else's stuff, and they're just taught how to copy it, not rework it. Otherwise, you destroy the other person's original work.
So how many official power users do you have now across the globe?
We probably have about 25 or so.
Okay, that is outstanding.
Yeah.
And so tell me about, you're kind of like an office of best practices for revenue marketing. So tell me a little bit more about that structure and what you guys are responsible for, because I see that role being absolutely critical in large distributed organizations. So tell me a little bit more about how you guys monitor and report on best practices.
Right. So the people that get reports go all the way up to the CEO and the president. So that you're talking about, you know, over a billion, we're $1.7 billion as a firm, and the senior management team of the firm wants to see what the response rates are, bounce back rates, and those kind of things. Those key metrics that we kind of look at right now are bounce rate, click-through rate, and then what the marketing qualified lead rate. And so there's a lot of pressure, in essence, to make sure we're trying to do our best. What happens is, because Eloqua reports centrally on any campaign that's run through it, my demand generation team, the centralized group, goes through each of the campaigns that are run in a particular week, and there's a dashboard report created. And actually, Eloqua is doing it automatically now. They used to have to kind of compile it, but Eloqua has upgraded its reporting structure and automation. So I actually get, on a weekly basis, I get a report of those three key metrics, where we are in aggregate, and then I also see a listing of every single campaign that was run the week before, and it shows me the particular metric rates for each of those campaigns. So I will quickly peruse the list and point out anything that I see as red flags, whether it's a huge bounce rate or a very low click-through rate from the same person who maybe they ran three campaigns and all of them were less than 1%. That always worries me.
Eric, I gotta tell you, I'm fascinated. Are you telling me that there's a report that goes to the CEO and president and they look at your response rate, bounce rate, click-through rate, and marketing qualified lead rate?
They look at it on a monthly basis. I look at it on a weekly basis. But they look at an aggregate on a monthly basis, and it creates conversations for the regional marketing leaders, because I've had those regional marketing leaders call me to explain, make sure they really understood how the metrics worked. Because remember, some of these marketing leaders may have not taken Eloqua. They're relying on somebody who reports to them.
Right.
So that's something I also encourage. I encourage a lot of the marketers, even though they may not want to become power users, they never use the system, they should listen in on the monthly calls as much as they can so that they understand the features and strategies that can be deployed. Otherwise, how can they be that strategic if they don't understand the ability of the systems that are out there?
So, Eric, what was it like getting senior management to pay attention to metrics like this? What were those conversations like?
Well, you know, what was interesting, the first effort to really change systems, right? I had mentioned we had started to go down a path, and this is before I took over the demand generation from the senior VP of sales. who had started going down a path with Hart Hanks, and a customized lead management system, I was asked to take over and analyze and decide whether we should keep that system. Well, we had already spent about $750,000 with Hart Hanks. And so basically, I was coming to the what we call the management leadership team and about to report out that we should cut the program.
Wow.
And move into other systems. And so it was kind of scary to go and say, look, you know, so I tried to say, well, look, we learned a lot here. We learned from this program that we tried to run with Hart Hanks that our people need a lot of education and they need a system that will give more insights and, you know, view to us centrally so that we can help them on an ongoing basis. And that was, you know, one of the factors that was wrong with the Hart Hanks system was really just kind of a grab and deploy system without a lot of back end analysis capabilities. You know, going in there and convincing the senior management team to, look, I'm going to kill this program, and I think we should go buy this program.
Wow.
And so that was a little scary. But, you know, they saw the sense of it, and they saw that there were better systems out there. We didn't have to create this big customized system out there. And I think, you know, and Eloqua, you know, is kind of on the higher end of the, you know, scale out there. But I've looked at other systems like Aprimo and other systems, and they're very good too. So, you know, if I were in a small startup, I would look at these systems that are out there because they're very good systems out there now. You don't need to build something.
You're right. There's too much good stuff out there. So you had a senior management team that was already predisposed to this conversation and who saw the value of demand generation efforts.
Yeah, I all the people saw value in demand generation. That nobody just had a real clue of how well we were or were not doing because
okay.
They tended to measure things, you know, even before we got into kind of electronic demand generation, we're doing a lot of direct mail, in just the ultimate result of a sale. Now, for us, a sale could be millions of dollars. So
mm-hmm.
If you think about it, you could have a low response rate and still look good ROI-wise.
Right.
But for me, that was kind of a false, you know, a false concept in that, well, we really should still be trying to get best practice percentage response rates just because other people are able to do it. We should shoot for that, not just settle that we got one sale out of, you know,
exactly.
10,000 touches.
Otherwise, your low response rates tell you that you're just irritating people. You're really not providing value in a digital conversation.
That's right. You know, and that goes back to the reputation management, which, you know, as an accounting firm or professional services firm, you're always trying to really protect.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that was one thing that that took some training and some education because people weren't realizing that, and they were forgetting about that, you know, everything that we send out that is not relevant to somebody and we continue to do it over and over, we're basically just hurting our brand and our reputation.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, and you as a professional, state-certified professional, would you continue to go knock on the door of a businessman who would never answer that door, you know?
Right.
So,
that's right. That's
and,
you just, you
and of course,
can't,
you had,
go ahead.
You can't keep doing that. You're just going to make somebody mad. So
that's right. I want to go back to your implementation because you were giving me a great story of how, you know, you work with professional services. You were very focused on best practices because, again, it's not just about knitting the technologies together. It's the best practices so you can get the result that you're looking for. You talked about the training that you put together and how you had an original core group of about 18 people who became official power users. And you told me about the tests that you put together and the kind of the new level of title that you established. And then you also talked about the monthly meetings where you've got some hour-long basic training from new people and you've got the more advanced. And then you've got that sharing of best practices that happens among that group. Can you tell me some more about how this group shares best practices? And are they sharing best practices around the globe or are they sharing best practices in a region? Tell me a little bit about how that meeting is facilitated and what they're sharing.
Generally, it's global so that the teams learn from each other no matter what say, market they're in. There may be particular segments, say, an industry-oriented one that they may talk about. But generally how that's facilitated is the demand generation team will pick out those ones that are clearly heads and above the other ones. You know, we get some that are 76% click-through rates. And so we want to make sure we highlight those. And if there's trends where there's somebody keeps it up way high like that above the serious decisions 8%, then we try and highlight those people over and over. So they bring it up in their training, and they will ask the person who put it together to kind of go through how they developed the whole program. And then people can kind of query and ask. What we find, because of that, people being kind of told, here's a best practice, here's what didn't work. We also bring up things that didn't work and maybe how we ask the group, we might show a slide of a program that didn't work and say, how could we improve this program? So we try to stay positive but point out things that maybe weren't quite right. You know, there's too much text. There were dozens of links, in an email, so people got confused of where they should go. And what we found is that you have exponential understanding happening. And so, you know, our first goal just in year one was to maybe move from 1%, or less than 1%, which is what we had before, to like 2%. I thought, okay, we'll get a 2% response rate. You know, direct marketing, that's actually good. But we jumped. We jumped over that and got to 3, and we're hitting 5 on a regular basis.
Wow, that's awesome.
Response rate after the year. Yeah, and so now we're hitting 7% on a regular basis. The goal is to get to 8, but as I mentioned, we regularly hit above that for certain programs where we're up in the 70s or 50s and 20s. So we're getting much better just learning from each other. The other thing demand generation team does, and myself, is I constantly look for best practices, and we try and share those. And those could be best practices in our industry or outside of our industry, and sometimes consumer-oriented, and we try and, you know, modify those.
Now, don't you also have an internal newsletter that you publish also with your best practices?
Yeah, we do that. We have Marketing Update, which is a monthly kind of newsletter. We're kind of turning it more into just kind of a fluid news intranet site, and we post those best practices up there as well. We also provide an awards program, recognition program. So twice a year we put out about 7 awards for different things around key metrics or the most competitive kind of program, the one that covered almost all the bases creatively, those kind of things. And so we put those out to encourage. And we do it nice. I mean, we put up a very nice award. We try to present it in a group format, so it's not like we're just sending them a box with a letter. And if we can't do it personally, like I can't do it personally, then I ask the regional leader to present it to that power user and or the marketing leader, you know, both together, because a lot of times it's a combined effort. There was a good strategy around it from somebody who's maybe not the power user, but they worked with the power user to develop a program.
I think that's absolutely – that's a great idea, having awards. And I just – again, I love the way you guys communicate and share those best practices in a global and a distributed organization. Having a mechanism where you can do that, and also having a mechanism where people are drawn to it and want to participate, really helps the learning and the exponential growth and their understanding of demand generation. But I believe you have something else that you offer, and don't you have a mentoring program as well, Eric?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me. Yes, you can. Certain people who have shown great capacity to put together strong programs and understand the system, they tend to be the people that, after becoming a power user, they start to explore the other features of Eloqua, or ask about what else can I do. And one reason is that we've kind of been very controlling about how we roll out the various feature sets of Eloqua, because Eloqua, of course, offers all sorts of things you can do in that system. You know, it even does social media measurement. But we didn't want people feeling overwhelmed by showing them all these features and thinking that they would try and use all of them. So we've slowly been rolling out various features from the, you know, the alarming to the basics of just the emailing out, then moving on beyond that. So now we're getting deeper into campaigns and long-term nurture cycles. We're starting to do that and lead scoring. So we've done it in kind of a stage effect, and what's happened is that those that are more kind of interested or advanced, or they just click to it, they tend to be ones asking for the next step. Almost, you know, so they're almost self-learning, educating, and so we turn them into mentors in a particular region, and they can become, they're kind of the first person to contact if you have a question around Eloqua and you're in that region. Because I only have a staff of about 2.5 people centrally for this whole program.
Wow. I was going to ask you how large your central staff was. 2.5, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And then you've got 25 users, 25 power users around the globe?
That's right. And they, of course, have pressure from, you know, a total of 90 marketers out there and 60 to 70 business developers. So, plus partners, if you, because partners will run their own, you know, they'll want to do stuff as well. So they, you have a lot of people that are currently trying to run programs, and it, so it puts a lot of pressure into the system.
So tell me, you know, we talked about how, you know, initially you rolled it out just to a core group in the U.S. How did you roll this out on a global basis?
So on the global basis, that was almost all done virtually. And we actually ran programs for others for the longest time. So that's one thing my central group will do, if whether it's a region or another country that would ask, we try to walk through it with them at first and do a lot of that heavy lifting. I mean, the beauty of, you know, a system like this is you have your templates built, and so you can control standards. You know, we have a process where people can request if they think they want to be more creative or they need to be, then we, there's a request put in to change it. So the central group will help handle a lot of that and, until somebody is ready. So, you know, in a broad case, we've only got 2 or 3 really that are dealing globally. The rest are here, region, you know, here in the U.S., Canada.
And are you doing multiple languages as well?
We are not at this point. It's still English. So.
Okay. Everything's in English. Okay.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get this whole thing rolled out and set up to the point that it is today?
We started out, you know, one of the first things we had to do, more specifically with Salesforce, was to clean up the Salesforce database and split out, create what they call objects, a lead object and a contact object in Salesforce. We thought that would be the best way to deal with the connectivity to Eloqua.
Yep.
Because Eloqua has certain parameters that it needs, right? It creates prospects and then contacts. And so prospects can be people without email, but we had certain requirements in Salesforce that you had to have more contact information to be a contact level person.
Mm-hmm.
So we created the lead object. We did that first and moved some people, some contacts around down to the lead object level if they didn't have all the information. That happened probably in August of, you know, a year and a half ago. By September, late September, October, we finalized the contract with Eloqua. October through November, we were doing all the technical parameters and creating, starting to create the guide. Early January, we had another meeting just with the small core group, my team and some Salesforce people and those kind of things. Late January, early February, we had the training. That following March, April, people were running, starting to run and use the system.
Okay.
And so if you, you know, put that all together, it's about a 6-month rollout, you know, when people actually put it together. We started, you know, in the beginning, it was all batch and blast. You know, people were like getting used to, you know, first time user, you know, and we knew that would happen. At, you know, Eloqua said everybody goes through this. And we're still doing it to some extent where there's still education around there, around best principles, around being relevant and timely versus making assumptions, and that anybody who's a CFO needs to get Text Digest, because many people don't. But you know, that's the beauty of all the measurement now. It's so automatic. You know, if we're in the direct mail world, we would mail out a newsletter and assume everybody was, you know, opening it. But now I can go back to the line of business leader and say, show them, you know, it's only a 5% response rate, but it'll get better.
Let's talk about some of your other metrics, because I know the key metrics is response, bounce, click-through, and MQL rate. And one of the rates that you've shared with us is your response rate, going from less than 1% to as high as 7 to 8%, which is just absolutely awesome. What are some other key metrics that you guys have achieved that you can share with us?
Well, the MQL was really low, as I'd mentioned, and our goal there, so the marketing qualified leads was, gosh, very low. Sales was not accepting much of anything, but where we're at right now, we probably bumped that up from, you know, less than 5% up to 11%, and the goal is to be at 20%, which is another serious decisions best practice, so we're trying to follow that. We have not defined yet what the sales close rate. We kind of know it right now. They're closing at about 40%, 40 to 50%. So we can kind of mathematically roll back out and start to forecast.
Mm-hmm.
But we are still cleaning up our database, and with the lead scoring, that's helping us do that. The lead scoring is actually helping us identify those things.
So when you say less than 5% to 11%, what does that number represent again?
That represents those respondents somebody who clicked through or grabbed something, who eventually we got enough demographic and, say, behavioral information about them that we felt like it was a qualified lead that we could hand over to sales.
Gotcha. Okay. And are they closing those MQLs at the same rate or a higher rate than leads that they generate?
Right now, I would say, you know, I'm not sure about that. I've not made that comparison against what they're doing on their own to what we're doing. But, you know, that's a very good point. I should check that with the sales group.
So when you think about the attitude of the sales organization today with the leads, the MQLs that you're giving them versus 18 months ago, what's the change?
I think the change is the way we marketing, really. It's not so much sales. It's really how we've decided, the marketing folks have learned, that it's not about quantity but quality, and that we need to start getting better and better at it in order to have true conversations. Now, they may be electronic-based, but it's still a conversation of sorts.
Oh, yes, it is. And, yes, it is.
You know, and to work that person through and align to their kind of buy cycle versus us trying to push them down through our sales cycle.
Did you guys actually map out the buy cycle, or is it something that you guys pay a lot of attention to or think about in your demand generation program?
We do, and we're still refining it. Probably where we need to go next is in two areas. One is around the content we offer, what type of content we offer, and when we offer it. So we've really paid attention to a lot of the things, best practices out there, like when to offer a white paper versus a case study versus a webinar, which can put somebody at a different place. You know, white paper, clearly they're maybe educating themselves, but if they start to look for case studies or they go on your website for capabilities page and stay there for X amount of time, then, gee, maybe they're ready to talk to somebody. So that was one area. Then, you know, then the other one is just finding out the best place to spend our time as we look at the ROI, the results of the data. How do we correct and improve?
So tell me a little bit about the best place to spend your time and what you've learned from using Eloqua and the changes that you make about where you are spending time.
Well, we're trying to move more into the behavioral understanding. so that we're starting to maybe segment a little more off of the clues that they give us through their behaviors of downloading this or visiting this page, or we set up a particular landing page and they're going there and they're staying there. And so the idea, instead of just segmenting on, say, their title or industry, we also add a flavor of, well, give me everybody who has clicked through in the last, you know, 3 months and visited these areas. So that's where we're starting to concentrate more effort, as opposed to just the simple segmentation.
And tell me about how you're now applying lead scoring, Eric.
So we have lead scoring in the traditional sense of the letter and the number. A through Z is the firmographic information and the person's title, the industry they're in, and those offer different scores based on the industry, because certain industries we target, and titles and roles. Actually, we got rid of titles. It's roles, because there's so many variety of titles.
Mm-hmm.
So we have roles, and then the other thing we take care of is then the behavioral side. So we've given weighting to different things that somebody can do. So, you know, surprisingly, a click-through rate gets a small percentage, maybe a 5% weight, whereas if they go attend an offline event, it gets a much higher rate.
Right.
If somebody, you know, if a business developer or inside salesperson actually talks to somebody and has a conversation with them, that gets more weight and those kind of things. And then there's a time frame built in there too, so that'll fluctuate. The number, 1 through 4, 1 being very highly engaged, is if they're a 1, they've been highly engaged in the last 30 days. If they, it'll start to then drop off as, you know, each week goes by, and they're finally getting back down to a 4 if they've not engaged after that time. And so the goal there, and this is an area, too, that really intrigued the business developers, because they weren't understanding it before, and we didn't really harp on this area in the beginning because we were still kind of understanding it. But probably 2 months ago, we really got a handle around the lead scoring more so than we have in the past. And we had a conversation with business developers, and they were kind of still iffy around the value, many of them. But the minute we started talking about lead scoring and showing them what it could do, they were like, we need to have a subcommittee, and we need to start developing this and really understanding it and using this, because they're realizing that it'll help them focus, you know, or
that's,
understand that a market.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you know what? I'll send something to you. I just recorded a brain shark a couple of months ago called Digital Body Language. And, of course, that's the title of Steve Wood's book from Eloqua. But I tell the story of buying a car and how they can look at your behavior online. And everybody has bought a car using the Internet. And I put that story together just to explain to somebody who never has thought about digital body language and reading it, what it can mean. I'll send you a copy of the Brain Shark, Eric. I think you guys might it might help. But I think it's great that the business developers are getting in and getting part of it, because they are the salespeople, and they are the people who think about the behavior, who see the behavior, who have to react to the behavior and have to follow up on the behavior. So having them as part of the role of helping you develop lead scoring is actually a very, very smart thing to do. And we see the most successful lead scoring programs are put together when it's put together with the sales organization as well. So is this your first iteration of lead scoring that you guys are going through right now?
It really is, where it's a combined effort. We've been toying with it to see how our database would map out when we did it, but this will be the first reiteration where it's really us working very closely with sales. And you're exactly right, and I think I remember talking to you once at a conference, and you had mentioned that as, you know, to get the salespeople on board is really make sure they're involved in the beginning. And it's really, you know, that's been probably the toughest side of it, because the business developers don't touch Eloqua on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like anything. Well, you know, it doesn't affect me, you know, until
exactly.
They...
Exactly, yeah.
You know,
I don't have
and
to
so
think
that,
about it. Don't have to change. Exactly.
You know, and so that has been a big aha for them and us, and of course we want to make sure that we are providing, we don't score something high when it shouldn't be, you know, so we need their feedback, and so we have to have them involved And I remember one of the salespeople, at one point we were in a meeting and early on, and they said, well, they wanted to cut this discussion off the agenda. Do we really need to understand this stuff? And I just said, well, if you want marketing support, you need to understand this stuff, you know. And of course, the next day when we went through it, he was the first guy to raise his hand. I need to be on this subcommittee, you know. So it's that really helped for them to understand that and how it would benefit them and help them focus. You know, and that focus could be on their top tier A1s, or it could be on their D4s if a lot of their D4s are supposed to be top tier clients, you know, prospects.
That's right. That's right. So what I really like about what you guys have done is you've got a great model for a distributed organization. You've got Eloqua. You've got your national team. It's run by you. You also own best practices, and you own the conversation, the communication, and the sharing for best practices. You own the testing. You've got rigor in process, so people not only understand how to use the platform itself, but they also understand demand generation. So, again, I can see why you have exponential growth in the metrics that you track, because people just aren't, you know, sending out emails. They really are becoming demand generation marketers. I also really like, Eric, that you've got the regions who are actually coming up with their own campaigns, because that allows them to have those one-on-one conversations with business development, so they're closer to the revenue number that the company is trying to achieve. So has that been a good series of conversations for you guys to have, having the field marketers, the regions, actually interacting at the local level around these conversations?
It has, and it really, you know, the other group it has really helped is the partners themselves, who, you know, traditionally are not the best business developers themselves, but when you can show them, look, you can have this online conversation and really only have a face-to-face when it makes sense, when it's relevant, and you're not going to come off as having a cold call. You're going to be having this kind of warmed-up conversation. Yeah, it really makes people peek up and think, wow, you know, I need to start listening to this and leveraging it and figuring out programs. You know, we had a partner working with a partner right now, a national line of business leader who wants to develop a national state and local tax nurture program that might last for 6 months, you know, that kind of thing. So it's really exciting, and having it close into the field, they're thinking the same way. And it's just interesting to see what people come up with. We're now doing a testimonial program. A field is testing that out. They just finished testing it. And they had a where they sent out, you know, the request of becoming a reference or a referenceable client and allow us to use the logo, so that, you know, the person gets the email and they can choose what they want to be or not at all. And we've always struggled to get clients to give us that in the past, and because a lot of times partners just didn't want to do it. They didn't want to ask, and so the system is taking care of that for them, and we had a 50% response rate of people
That's
saying,
awesome.
Yes, I'll be a reference.
How many partners in the firm?
I think we have 2,000 partners, 2,000 partners, and then you've got directors and associates. And
right. And again, what a great story, because people always ask me, can you use marketing automation and can it be effective when you've got very complex, heavy relationship-oriented sales cycles? And clearly the answer is absolutely yes. So we understand kind of where you are right now. So what's next in your journey as a revenue marketer? What are you guys looking to do to improve upon in the next 6 to 8 months, Eric?
Well, you know, this is one piece of a bigger puzzle, and we look at it as one giant engine, which is demand generation connected to the website through, we also leverage Omniture, which is another, you know, web analytics tool, and then Omniture also stretches out to our banners, because we put scripts to track those out there, and so we're really starting to get a full picture, which also then affects our media choices of what we buy out in the world. So I can have discussions with my media planners from the beginning to end, where we take a look at, you know, at one point CNN Money looked like it was providing us the most click-throughs off those banners on that site, but then we looked at how deep they were going into the system, onto our website and staying in the line, and they weren't doing that at all. They were coming to our website and leaving right away, whereas the Google Finance program geared on behavioral metrics was actually people were staying 6 minutes, you know, on
wow.
our website. And so just having understanding and be able to look at that. So continued measurement and pulling that together. The next step is the social media side and how do we leverage that to better impact and have dialogue and show our expertise and credibility and start to, again, drive more people down that funnel to our website and start to pick up that thought leadership and view us as leaders. So we're going to be looking at that. And, of course, the analytics, the ROI is always the big thing I harp on because, you know, in the past, marketing and advertising was this kind of nebulous thing. You knew you had to do it, but you didn't know quite what was working, what wasn't. And so
uh-huh.
those are kind of the big areas. It's kind of continue to put